and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. And that is set to be a busy show. We have got a lot to get into this morning. President Trump meeting with for the first time in his second term with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Of course, the news surrounding today, both the Ukrainian president alongside a litany of European leaders are slated to meet with President Trump at the Oval Office, at the White House, coming up later on this afternoon, as it has been a busy couple of days as the war and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine continues to wage on. We'll get into all of the precursors of that meeting coming up as we roll through the program this morning. But we'll start off Friday in Anchorage, Alaska, where, as that meeting between Trump and Putin took place, the talks lasted, well, about 3 hours or so before everything was said and done. And the series of events, I think, were rather interesting. The meeting took place 3 hours, and then there was immediately, which was not supposed to happen, but immediately a press conference after the meeting took place. They were supposed to meet, then there was supposed to be some sort of late lunch that was going to take place between all of the Russian and United States counterparts that were there. That seemingly did not happen, at least as it was supposed to. Trump and Putin walk out, have this joint press conference. It wasn't very long, about 15 or 16 minutes in total. Most of that, the Russian president speaking, of course, we'll hear it through a translator. The meeting ends, and then they're both gone. Putin and his people jump on a plane. Trump and his folks do the same thing. They fly back to D.C. Putin flies back to Russia, and that was that. It was a very quick press conference. No questions being answered no questions being taken, I should say, by either of the world leaders after this meeting took place. We'll start off with the open from the Russian president, again, through a translator at the after the meeting in Alaska on Friday.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, our negotiations have been held in a constructive atmosphere of mutual respect. We have very thorough negotiations that were quite useful. I would like to thank once again my American counterpart for the proposal to travel out here to Alaska. It only makes sense that we've met here because our countries, though separated by the oceans, are close neighbors.
You know, and it was weird. Putin kind of did the similar thing. If you watched his interview he did a couple of years ago with Tucker Carlson, a vast majority of Putin's commentary on Friday was this weird history lesson on how the United States through Alaska is very close and very connected to the United States. All of this weird history. That's why he spoke for so long. I chopped all of that out because it was nothing more than the same kind of propaganda you heard during the Tucker Carlson interview about, oh, how we're, you know, we're so close to our neighbors and all of this weird, I said hello to my neighbor, I'm glad my neighbor's doing well. It was just a really weird opening from, or a commentary from, the Russian president in Vladimir Putin. But he did talk a little bit about the about 3 hour talks that took place. This is what the Russian president had to say.
This time was very hard for bilateral relations, and let's be frank, they have fallen to the lowest point since the Cold War. I think that's not benefiting our countries and the world as a whole. It is apparent that sooner or later we had to amend the situation to move on from the confrontation to dialogue. And in this case, a personal meeting between the heads of state has been long overdue, naturally under the condition of serious and painstaking work. And this work has been done in general. Me and President Trump have very good direct contact. We've spoken multiple times. We spoke frankly on the phone. And special envoy of the president, Mr. Witkoff, traveled out to Russia several times. Our advisors and heads of foreign ministries kept in touch all the time. And you know fully well that one of the central issues was the situation around Ukraine. We see the strive of the administration and President Trump personally to help facilitate the resolution of the Ukrainian conflict. And his strive to get to the crux of the matter, to understand this history, is precious.
Now, I'm going to stop the translator there and stop the Russian president. It does, with this meeting taking place on Friday and what's expected to happen later today with Zelensky, and we'll get into the list of who from the European Union is going to be there. To me, it does beg a very interesting question. Why did this not happen 12 months ago, 24 months ago, or even 36 months ago? I mean, obviously, the Russian president was willing to come to the United States. He was willing to sit down with the president of the United States and have these, as you hear there from the Russian president, these tough negotiations. And, you know, he says bringing an end to the war. I'm not sure he necessarily believes that, but, you know, he's willing to talk, and he comes and has these conversations. It should bring forth in your mind a very simple question. Why was the previous guy incapable of doing this? I mean, Trump didn't have to move heaven and earth to get this meeting scheduled. Him and Putin have had a couple, I think maybe three or four direct phone calls since he's been in the Oval Office, though he has sent Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and other delegates from the United States. They were just in Moscow like 2 weeks ago to go through and continue to talk about this. And it really, I think, shows the difference between the previous administration and what you've got now. You really see the difference between strong leadership and weak leadership. I'm not going to make this whole show about how incompetent, how useless Joe Biden was, but it's an important piece of this equation. This war did not start under the watch of Donald Trump. This war did not start under the watch of Republicans in control. This was solely the responsibility of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, the Democrat Party, and the Biden administration. This happened under their watch. It essentially happened with their blessing, with the Joe Biden at the time saying, well, you know, if it's just a minor incursion, we don't really have to worry about that. So all of this happened. And it begs the question as to why the previous administration could not get together with their counterparts in Russia and hammer out a deal, and why it took Donald Trump, thank God, getting reelected in November of last year to bring this forward. I'll note, Trump has not even been in office 7 months yet. It'll be 7 months on Wednesday, the 20th, that he has been in the Oval Office. Already, there's been multiple phone calls, multiple delegation visits, and then this big summit taking place in Anchorage, Alaska on Friday. Why could the previous guy not do this?
As I've said, the situation in Ukraine has to do with fundamental threats to our security. Moreover, we've always considered the Ukrainian nation, and I've said it multiple times, a brotherly nation, however strange it may sound in these conditions. We have the same roots, and everything that's happening is a tragedy for us and terrible wound. Therefore, the country is sincerely interested in putting an end to it. At the same time, we're convinced that in order to make the settlement lasting and long-term, we need to eliminate all the primary roots, the primary causes of that conflict. And we've said it multiple times, to consider all legitimate concerns of Russia and to reinstate a just balance of security in Europe and in the world on the whole. And I agree with President Trump, as he has said today, that naturally the security of Ukraine should be ensured as well. Naturally, we are prepared to work on that.
So a couple of things to take away from that. At the end there, the security of Ukraine, that is the big news of the weekend. But again, this weird kind of history lesson and what can only be described as propaganda from the Russian president, which I would not expect there to be anything differently, at least on the public stage, about how the people in Ukraine, which for a period of time, yes, was part of Russia, the country itself. You know, there are brothers. That's why this is such a tragedy. So on and so forth. I mean, you talk about gaslighting. That is exactly what the Russian president was doing with his commentary. He did it with Tucker Carlson back a couple of years ago. He's done it with Western media, and he did it in this public press conference with Donald Trump that took place on Friday. You know, he talks about it. Oh, it's a pain. It's a struggle. I don't believe a word out of his mouth when he says that. If this was truly such a pain and struggle for his so-called brothers in Ukraine, well, he wouldn't continue to embark down this road of a three-year war. But that is exactly where he is this morning and where he's been for the last 3 years. The president also talked, or the Russian president, I should say, talked a little bit about the agreement as well.
Closer that goal. I would like to hope that the agreement that we've reached together will help us bring closer that goal and will pave the path towards peace in Ukraine. We expect that Kyiv and European capitals will perceive that constructively and that they won't throw a wrench in the works. They will not make any attempts to use some backroom dealings to conduct provocations to torpedo the nascent progress.
So the talk there and the commentary there from the Russian president is interesting, and it would appear, and again, appear, I can't say anything for certain, can't predict exactly what's going to happen in the future. I've got all the same information that everybody else does. It would appear that Vladimir Putin, and this has been one of the big wild card questions for the last couple of years, that the Russian president is actually interested in bringing this war to an end. Now, the deal on the so-called agreement remains unknown this morning. There's been some leaking of that. No, I shouldn't say leaking. There's been some discussion of that over the weekend. There's been some commentary from those on the U.S. side over the weekend as to what that could look like. Discussions of some level of security protection, not access to NATO, but some level of security protection for the country of Ukraine and the Ukrainian people. But at least from these comments, again, I'm taking them for what they are. We know the backstory of Putin. We know how he operates. We know what he's capable of. And so taking that for what it is, taking that for what it's worth, it would appear that he is at least interested in some level of a some sort of agreement, some sort of ceasefire, some sort of peace deal in this ongoing conflict. More from the Russian president.
I would like to thank President Trump for our joint work, for the well-wishing and trustworthy tone of our conversation. It's important that both sides are result-oriented, and we see that the president of the U.S. has a very clear idea of what he would like to achieve. He sincerely cares about prosperity of his nation. Still, he understands that Russia has its own national interests. I expect that today's agreements will be the starting point, not only for the solution of the Ukrainian issue, but also will help us bring back businesslike and pragmatic relations between Russia and the U.S. And in the end, I would like to add one more thing. I'd like to remind you that in 2022, during the last contact with the previous administration, I tried to convince my previous American colleague that the situation should not be brought to the point of no return when it would come to hostilities. And I said it quite directly back then that it's a big mistake. Today, when President Trump saying that if he was the president back then, there will be no war. And I'm quite sure that it would indeed be so. I can confirm that. I think that overall, me and President Trump have built a very good businesslike and trustworthy contact. And I have every reason to believe that moving down this path, we can come, and the sooner the better, to the end of the conflict in Ukraine. Thank you. Thank you.
A couple of interesting things to take away from that final clip before it's turned over to President Donald Trump. You heard Putin multiple times talk about business, and traveling with the Russian president was over 100 businessmen from Russia, as the Russian economy, over 40% of it is essentially the equivalent of a military industrial complex. 40% of their economy is the military. They are trying to expand and grow their economy. And in this case, Donald Trump holds all of the cards as it relates to the exploration and a business partnership between these two nations. Trump holds all of the cards and all of the leverage and all of the negotiating power with that. And it appears obvious based on the fact that Putin brought 100 plus businessmen with him, that that is one of the things that they're looking for out of this agreement. And I'll stop here before we get into President Donald Trump's comments. A lot of course, those on the political left over the weekend and on Friday night and through the weekend talking about how this was a failure because Trump didn't have an agreement immediately coming out of this meeting. It's important to understand that Donald Trump himself cannot force Ukraine into an agreement. The war that is brewing right now is not between the United States and Russia. It is between the country of Russia and the country of Ukraine. The United States, and in this case, President Donald Trump, is acting as an intermediary between the two. He is doing what he does best, negotiating deals, bringing both sides to the table. But he himself cannot strike a deal and force another sovereign nation into an agreement. That has to be done by both of the countries, being Russia and Ukraine, not the United States. Now, the United States is heavily involved and unfortunately heavily invested from a monetary standpoint. We have pissed away hundreds of billions of dollars, so-called helping Ukraine fight this war over the last 3 years. That money's gone. We're never going to get it back. Yes, this rare earth agreement signed earlier this year could recoup something for the United States, but we're never going to be whole on the money that we've invested into this war. And I find it, of course, so incredibly ironic that those on the political left somehow want Donald Trump to agree to a peace deal with Russia and Ukraine without the other party in the room. He has no ability to do that. We're talking about another sovereign nation that has to agree to the deal with Russia, not the United States. So I'll just set that aside. And then, of course, at the end of his comments there, Vladimir Putin noting that his last contact with the United States, with the administration, was in 2022. Pathetic. And it really paints an even greater picture of how incompetent, how weak, and how useless the Biden administration was when you compare and contrast that to what Donald Trump has done in less than 7 months back in the Oval Office. Here's Trump.
We were interfered with by the Russia hoax that made it a little bit tougher to deal with, but he understood it. I think he's probably seen things like that during the course of his career. He's seen it all. But we had to put up with the Russia hoax. He knew it was a hoax, and I knew it was a hoax. But what was done was very criminal. But it made it harder for us to deal as a country in terms of the business and all of the things that we'd like to have dealt with. But we'll have a good chance when this is over.
So a good chance when this is over, according to President Donald Trump, more of his comments from the right after the talks on Friday in Anchorage, Alaska.
So just to put it very quickly, I'm going to start making a few phone calls and tell them what happened. But we had an extremely productive meeting and many points were agreed to. There are just a very few that are left. Some are not that significant. One is probably the most significant, but we have a very good chance of getting there. We didn't get there, but we have a very good chance of getting there. I would like to thank President Putin and his entire team, whose faces, who I know in many cases, otherwise, other than that, whose faces I get to see all the time in the newspapers. You're almost as famous as the boss, but especially this one right over here. But we had some good meetings over the years, right? Good productive meetings over the years, and we hope to have that in the future. But let's do the most productive one right now. We're going to stop really 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, thousands of people a week from being killed, and President Putin wants to see that as much as I do. So, again, Mr. President, I'd like to thank you very much, and we'll speak to you very soon and probably see you again very soon. Thank you very much, Vladimir.
So there's the extent, essentially, of President Donald Trump's comments after the Alaskan summit between him and Russian President Vladimir Putin. My gut reaction and gut takeaway from this, and going back to Friday afternoon when I saw this, or Friday night, rather, when this was taking place, from all accounts, from both sides, the meeting went well. Donald Trump said beforehand, and we played the clip on the Friday show, if he was very clear, he told Brian Kilmeade this on Thursday afternoon or Thursday morning, if he, Trump walked into the room, he was very clear that he would know within the first 2 to 3 minutes whether this meeting was actually going to be useful or not. He knew, he said that he would know very quickly into the back and forth exchange whether it was worth continuing this discussion. And he said, if not, I'm going to walk out of the room, I'm going to pack up my people, pack up my stuff, and we're heading back to Washington, D.C. That didn't happen. The meeting, which apparently was Trump, Rubio, Putin, and one of his top individuals, you'll have to excuse me, I don't know the exact breakdown of the Russian dignitaries and how their government works. But so it was, you know, those four in a room, of course, translators helping the conversation take place. And that was the group that did the negotiating for the better part of 3 hours. Now, I don't know in that time if individuals like Witkoff got into the room. I don't know if J.D. Vance, who was there, if he made his way in. But that's how at least it started. And the fact that the talks lasted 3 hours, now I'll admit, They did, the end of the event did seem to happen pretty rapidly from all accounts. There was supposed to be a pretty big pause between the end of the meeting, some sort of lunch, and then this press conference, which didn't end up really being a press conference at all. Both leaders spoke and then, of course, hopped on their respective planes and jetted back to where they were supposed to be at. So the ending of it seemed rather odd, but it was reported, and I saw comments from those that were in the room, that while Putin was talking, while Trump was talking, nobody on either side of the delegation was they weren't making any faces. There was no vitriolic reaction to what was being said by either side. So it didn't appear that Putin or Trump was using this to misrepresent the situation or play this out as something that it wasn't. It seemed like the talks were productive. I wasn't in the room. Nobody on CNN, nobody on MSNBC, nobody at the Washington Post or the New York Times or any of these other left-wing rags, none of them were in the room either. So all I have is the information that has been given to me from Steve Witkoff, from Marco Rubio over the weekend appearing on the Sunday shows, from President Trump, from the Russian side. Everybody says it was a good, productive meeting. And the fact that it was so, I believe the fact that it was so productive is backed up by the fact that Zelensky and the heads of several European nations are already in the United States this morning and are meeting with Donald Trump and his team, again, presumably Rubio and Witkoff and some other folks, meeting with them early this afternoon. If the talks were not at least somewhat successful, if there was not some progress that was made in this ongoing conflict, I don't know why these guys would be and gals would be traveling to the United States this morning. If Putin was not interested in peace, if the demands that he was making were so absurd and so beyond the pale, there would be nothing to talk to Zelensky or NATO or anybody else in the EU about anything. It would, you just say, okay, well, Putin isn't moving on this. You are, of course, not going to give up your entire country. So we're at a continued standstill. The war goes on. Thousands a day continue to die. I mean, but that didn't happen. The meeting went well enough to garner all of those folks here in the United States today and President Donald Trump saying multiple times that there's going to be another meeting, presumably very soon, with the Russian president. That literally could happen within the next week or two, depending on what goes on today in the Oval Office, what goes on today in the White House, as now we get the other side of the other party in this conflict. Again, important to note, the United States is not involved, at least from a war standpoint. The United States cannot itself broker a deal with one party or the other. They have to come to an agreement themselves. Now, the United States can help facilitate. The United States can do with what Donald Trump has been attempting to do for the last 7 months, which is bring both parties to the table, hammer out the details, and help them come to some sort of agreement. But the U.S. itself cannot unilaterally say, we have a peace deal. There's no conceivable way for that to take place. Donald Trump is not the president of Ukraine. Donald Trump has no authority over what the Ukrainian president and Zelensky or the Ukrainian government does. Zero control over that at all. Now, he can pressure, he can encourage, but he can't force them to do anything, right? Even though we're told that Donald Trump is an authoritarian and is a dictator and all of these great words that are used by those on the political left, he can't do that. And he didn't, in fact, do that on Friday. And anybody that was of the mindset that you were going to be walking out with a signed agreement on Friday was I guess, just believing in a fairy tale. This was set up to push things forward, to try and move the negotiations on from where they have been stalled, because that's exactly what's happened. As you heard from Vladimir Putin, the United States and Russia have not had contact since 2022. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and their ilk sat on their hands in the White House, had absolutely no contact with the Russian delegation or the Russian leadership over the final 2 years of the administration. Just completely insane. Trump is bringing everybody together, and we're going to see that unfold a little bit later on today. I'll have a preview of what that is going to look like, plus the media already acting in the most ridiculous manner that you can imagine as a result of this meeting coming up. We'll get into those details coming up here in a couple of minutes. Before that, I do want to thank the law group here in Wilmington and tell you about them and what they offer. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We'll get into some of your comments rolling in this morning on our various live channels, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and we'll continue with that and preview what is expected to be another high-stakes meeting for President Donald Trump, President Vladimir Zelensky, and European leaders coming up a little bit later on today. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Monday morning, streaming on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for being with us as it has been a busy couple of days in international politics. That is expected to continue this morning as President Donald Trump will welcome Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky and European leaders to the White House. That European delegation consists of the UK Prime Minister, France's President, the German Chancellor, the Prime Minister of Italy, the Finnish President, and the NATO Secretary General. All will be in the same room today, at least at some point, for ongoing discussions and ongoing negotiations, as all of those groups are, of course, trying to explore paths to end this ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. Discussions of a ceasefire, territorial demands, some sort of security guarantees, all of that will be on the table this morning after what all accounts to a successful meeting with the Russian president in Vladimir Putin on Friday in Anchorage, Alaska. You know, this is to me, a good sign. And I don't know how anybody could see it any other way. You know, the world essentially has one chance to get this deal done. And we are watching it unfold in front of our very eyes right now. This is the shot. This is the chance. Putin is engaged with Trump. He wants business exploration, wants to grow the Russian economy, which he has no choice to do because their economy is a skeleton of what it was in the past. So he is hell-bent on opening trade channels and opening up a business relationship between the United States and Russia. He desperately wants that. It's obvious based on who he brought and his comments with President Donald Trump on Friday. So he wants business relationships between the two countries. Trump holds all of the cards with that, and I can presume is using that as a major negotiating tool between the two countries as he, Trump, tries to broker a deal between Russia and Ukraine. You've got Zelensky, who will be in the United States, or is already in the United States today, will be meeting with the president early this afternoon, and a bunch of the European delegation, the list I just went through of individuals who definitely should want to see an end to this war. But even with all of that, the media is already out there doing its spin, trying to talk down this meeting. This happened with Marco Rubio on CBS's Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, who is nothing more than a deep state hack, progressive liberal lunatic. Watch this back and forth exchange between her and Rubio. And it just goes to show you where the United States, predominantly media, which is one and the same with the Democrat Party, where their mindset is with this whole thing. Listen to the staging and framing. And man, every single time I hear from Marco Rubio, I love this guy more and more. He has really done a phenomenal job in the role of Secretary of State. He is not putting up with any of the liberal media's nonsense, the Democrat Party's framing of situations. He absolutely smacks down CBS's Margaret Brennan in this exchange. Take a listen.
You know, there is concern from the Europeans that President Zelensky is going to be bullied into signing something away. That's why you have these European leaders coming as backup tomorrow. Can you reassure them?
No, it isn't. That's not why they're coming us back. That's not true. No, but that's not why. That's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're
well,
not coming.
February, in fact, they're coming here tomorrow in front of television cameras where President Zelensky.
Do you know how many meetings we've had since then?
Oh no, I know, and I was just up in Alaska watching the one with Vladimir Putin where a red carpet rolled out.
No, but
it was
Zelensky. We've had more meetings. We've had one meeting with Putin and like a dozen meetings with Zelensky. So, but that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're coming here tomorrow because we've been working with the Europeans. We talked to them last week. There were meetings in the UK over the previous weekend.
And they said President Trump was going to demand a ceasefire
as early as Thursday. No, no. But you said that they're coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're not coming here tomorrow. Oh, this is such a stupid media narrative that they're coming here tomorrow because Trump is going to bully Zelensky into a bad deal. We've been working with these people for weeks on this stuff. They're coming here tomorrow because they chose to come here tomorrow. We invited them to come. We invited them to come. The president invited them to come.
But the president told those European leaders last week that he wanted a ceasefire. The president went on television, said he would walk out of the meeting if Vladimir Putin didn't agree with him.
That is not true. That is complete falsities from Margaret Brennan. You can hear, this is why people hate the mainstream media. Now, you couldn't really hear it because she, of course, was speaking over Marco Rubio. I don't know why the hell you have a guest on your show if you're just going to speak over them the entire time. It kind of defeats the whole purpose of having a guest. If you just want to placate yourself, if you're just trying to push your liberal media narrative, why the hell have Marco Rubio on? Why waste his time coming on your stupid program to talk about anything when you just want to set the stage and talk the entire time, which is exactly what she's trying to do? She's talking about how, oh, the only reason the European leaders are there is so that Zelensky doesn't get bullied into a bad deal. I don't think that's the case at all. Marco Rubio, who I would say is a subject matter expert in this, he was in the room negotiating with Putin for 3 freaking hours on Friday. He is going to be at the White House today with Zelensky and the rest of the European delegation. I tend to believe what he says over what some jackass in Margaret Brennan at CBS believes. And what she goes, but I saw it. I was in Russia. I was in Alaska. I watched them roll out the red carpet. That's very different from what we saw in February with Zelensky. Yeah, it is very different. Vladimir Zelensky came to the United States in late February of this year, made a complete and total ass of himself in front of the American media. J.D. Vance and Donald Trump jumped down his throat, rightfully so, and kicked him out of the White House, which is exactly what should have happened. Because he was acting like a complete and total fool. The European leaders coming to the White House today, I think is anything to do with him not taking a bad deal. I think it's got everything to do with keeping Zelensky in line. I think it's got everything to do with trying to keep him from acting like a complete and total clown, which is what we've seen in the past. We've got some commentary kind of backing this up coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. As a comment coming in, hopefully has been Europeans at the meeting will hold the child clown Zelensky to a peace agreement. I just don't think you can trust that Zelensky is not going to make a total fool of himself. I mean, he came here in February, tried to completely restate the conflict in front of the American media, the sympathetic American media, and Donald Trump and J.D. Vance put him in his place, as they should have. And so now you've got Margaret Brennan indicating that the European leaders are storming into the meeting. They're not invited. They weren't supposed to be there, but they're going to show up anyway so that they can make sure that Zelensky doesn't sign a bad deal. Well, first of all, you don't just show up to the White House. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the head of NATO, the president of France. You can't just show up to the White House. You have to be invited to the White House. You can't just show up and say, oh, hey, I'm a world leader. I'm here. That's not how that works. So if Trump, the authoritarian and dictator that he supposedly is, if he wants to force Zelensky into a bad deal to get this done, why the hell would he invite all of these other leaders? Again, they can't just show up on their own. They can't just waltz into the Oval Office and say, hi, I'm Emmanuel Macron. I'm here for my meeting with President Donald Trump. That's not how that works. Margaret Brennan knows that, but her and everybody else at CBS News are so incredibly disingenuous about what's going on that this is how they frame the situation, that they have to be there. Again, folks, just break down what she just said. If the goal is to force Zelensky into a bad deal, why would Trump want these seven European leaders there? It makes absolutely no sense. They were invited by the president. They were invited by this administration to continue the talks. If he just wants to bully Zelensky, why the hell would he have those people there? It makes absolutely no sense. The narrative falls flat on its face immediately, because it's so nonsensical. But of course, that does not stop the lamestream mainstream media from their continued ridiculous narratives and propaganda.
Last week that he wanted a ceasefire. The president went on television, said he would walk out of the meeting
not
if Vladimir
true.
Putin didn't agree with one. He
not
said
true.
There would be severe consequences if he didn't agree to one. He said he'd walk out in 2 minutes. He spent 3 hours talking to Vladimir Putin and he did not get one. So there's
because
some
obviously
messages.
Something things happened during that meeting. Well, because obviously things look, our goal here is not to stage some production for the world to say, oh, how dramatic he walked out. Our goal here is to have a peace agreement to end this war. OK, and obviously we felt and I agreed that there was enough progress, not a lot of progress, but enough progress made in those talks to allow us to move to the next phase. If not, we wouldn't be having Zelensky flying all the way over here. We wouldn't
Bingo.
Be having all the Europeans coming all the way over here.
100% spot on there from Marco Rubio. If the meeting was so bad on Friday, which is how the Democrats want it, because they love war, they love death, they love this ongoing conflict, they are foaming at the mouth because they love war and death. That's a fact. They love it. If the meeting was so freaking bad and such a miserable failure, which is exactly what the Democrats want, because again, they're not interested in peace. Their guy was in the Oval Office for, oh, I don't know, 4 freaking years, 3 of those in which this conflict was brewing. If they wanted peace so bad, their guy could have had it. And before I continue with the Rubio clip, Trump commented on this on his Truth Social last night. He wrote, quote, "The fake news has been saying for 3 days that I suffered a major defeat by allowing President Vladimir Putin of Russia to have a major summit in the United States. Actually, he would have loved doing the meeting anywhere else but the U.S. And the fake news knows this. It was a major point of contention. If we had the summit elsewhere, the Democrat-run and controlled media would have said that was a terrible thing that as well. These people are sick." He's 100% right. The Russian president came to U.S. soil to negotiate this deal, to open the lines of communication that Joe Biden and the Democrats closed off completely, that Margaret Brennan and CBS were behind closing off those conversations because they're not interested in peace. They're not interested in any sort of deal being made. And folks, you don't have to go too far out on a limb to understand that. If the Democrats wanted this to be dealt with, Why the hell didn't they do anything while this war raged under their noses for 3 years? I mean, it's a simple enough question to ask, and of course, there's no answer. And so the point that Marco Rubio makes, if the meeting was so bad, if you can somehow telegraph, you weren't in the room, Margaret Brennan. I was, you weren't. But if the meeting was so bad, why would we be having Zelensky and all of these heads from European nations and NATO in the United States today? The narrative makes no sense.
Enough progress made in those talks to allow us to move to the next phase. If not, we wouldn't be having Zelensky flying all the way over here. We wouldn't be having all the Europeans coming all the way over here. Now, understand and take with a grain of salt, I'm not saying we're on the verge of a peace deal, but I am saying that we saw movement, enough movement to justify a follow-up meeting with Zelensky and the Europeans, enough movement for us to dedicate even more time to this. You talk about the sanctions. Look, at the end of the day, if peace is not going to be possible here and this is just going to continue on as a war, people will continue to die by the thousands. The president has that option to then come in and impose new sanctions. But if he did this now, the moment the president puts those additional sanctions, that's the end of the talks. You've basically locked in at least another year to year and a half of war and death and destruction. We may unfortunately wind up there, but we don't want to wind up there. We want to wind up with a peace deal that ends this war so Ukraine can go on with the rest of their lives and rebuild their country and be assured that this is never going to happen again. That's the goal here. We're going to do everything possible to make that happen if it's doable. It will require both sides to make concessions. It will require both sides to get things they're asking for. That's how these deals are made, whether we like it or not.
Bingo. I absolutely love what Marco Rubio is doing as Secretary of State. And that final 60 seconds of his comments there could not be any more accurate. They want, obviously, this to end. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and the Democrats did not. They didn't. They didn't do anything to facilitate it. So if they truly wanted the war to end, they would have done something, but they didn't. Trump has been hell-bent on this. He campaigned on it. He's been working on it since January 20th of this year. He's had multiple phone calls with the Russian president. He has sent Steve Witkoff, Marco Rubio, and other folks all across the world to meet with Russian dignitaries and try and hammer a deal out. He met with Putin face-to-face for 3 freaking hours on Friday, and it's still not enough for the media. I just talked about this last week. No matter what Donald Trump does, and I made sure that we talked about this on Friday, regardless of what happened, on Friday, Trump could have come out and said, we have a deal. It's done. And Margaret Brennan still would have had her line of questioning like this. They are not interested in a peace deal. And on the unfortunate reason why, one of the many reasons, is because then they're going to have to give credit to Donald Trump. If Trump brokers a deal between Russia and Ukraine, it might be the single largest, most important thing he does domestic policy or international policy wise during his administration, bringing to end a 3-year-plus war with hundreds of thousands of people dead on both sides. And the media cannot possibly wrap their head around the concept that they'd have to give Trump credit for that. They do not want to paint a picture in which Donald Trump looks like he did anything successfully. And they will say or do anything to make it seem bad, to make it seem like this was a miserable failure. Zelensky could come out today and say, we have agreed to Russia's terms. We're going to move forward with a peace deal. And it still won't be enough because God forbid they have to give Trump credit, Steve Witkoff or Marco Rubio credit for anything that they do. Anything. And it's incredibly unfortunate that that is the situation that we're in. But that's where we are. And it's obvious when you listen and watch the media reaction to this that that's where they're at. As I glanced over at and had network news on in the background this morning, that's the same narrative that they're pushing. That's what they're talking about on CNN. That's what they're talking about on MSNBC. That they want this to fail because they do not want to give Trump credit. That's what it comes down to, probably more than anything else. Steve Witkoff on Fox News Sunday with Shannon Breen. This is what he had to say. This is coming right off the summit on Friday.
And we were on the phone with President Zelensky moments after the Alaska summit ended. And I can tell you that I spoke to him personally, gave him my view. The president obviously was making the presentation, and everybody recognized on that telephone call, and there were various European leaders, how much progress we had made in demonstrating that the Russian Federation was going to make significant accommodations well beyond what we thought before that summit started. So it was absolutely acknowledged as a win. Now, that being said, there are details. That's what happens in a negotiation. You try to move one side towards the middle, then you try to move the other side towards the middle. The president achieved that, certainly in my view and in the view of many others as well, but I was sitting right there. The president achieved that beyond what everyone's expectations were. And now we're immediately moving to a meeting with the Ukrainians, with the Europeans, and hopefully we can narrow the issues down even further and get ourselves well along the way towards the codification of a peace deal.
I mean, what part of that sounds negative? You just heard directly from Steve Witkoff. This guy was in Moscow like 2 weeks ago negotiating. He says he was in the room, so I guess he was also there with Trump and Rubio. Moved Russia way further than they thought possible. Were presumably able to get, in terms of some sort of concessions from Russia, way more than they thought beforehand. And they're wasting no time. Trump landed back in the continental United States. Of course, Alaska is a state, but landed back in Washington, D.C. at 5 a.m. Saturday morning after leaving around 8 a.m. Friday morning, almost a 20-plus hour trip back and forth. And has already scheduled this meeting for Monday. Not wasting literally a minute. From Friday to Monday, now you've got European leaders and the Ukrainian president, Vladimir Zelensky, in the United States. But that's a failure? Because Trump himself did not walk out of that meeting with a ceasefire, which he cannot do. There's no way to agree for both sides. That's what today is. You just heard that from Steve Witkoff. We moved Russia. We figured out where their hardline points are. We figured out where the negotiating looks for them. And now we're going to do the same thing, not only with Zelensky and Ukraine, but with the rest of the European leaders. Figure out where their hardline issues are and talk about those concessions. How can you see this any other way than a win? And going back to Marco Rubio's comments, they want to bring this to an end. If they are successful in doing so, great. If they're not, then the United States moves forward with its plans, incredibly increased tariffs on Russia, and continues to cripple their economy, which will fracture the relationship and will cause this war to go on for at least another year, year and a half, or 2 years. And it will continue. Thousands will die, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands will die on both sides, and the war will continue. That's how this is going to play out. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. And so here's more of Steve Witkoff. He was on with Jake Tapper of CNN as well, going back and forth, describing more of the situation that unfolded on Friday. Here's another interview from Witkoff.
In terms of Ukrainian security guarantees, you mentioned the Article 5 guarantee of NATO, an attack on one and it's an attack on all. Russia would allow that to happen, that any further incursions into Ukraine, Russia would understand, would be seen as an attack on all NATO members?
No, Jake, that's not what I said. What I said is that we got to an agreement that the United States and other European nations could effectively offer Article 5-like language to cover a security guarantee. So Putin has said that a red flag is NATO admission.
Right.
And so what we were discussing was assuming that that held, assuming that the Ukrainians could agree to that and could live with that, and everything is going to be about what the Ukrainians can live with. But assuming they could, we were able to win the following concession, that the United States could offer Article 5-like protection. Which is one of the real reasons why Ukraine wants to be in NATO. We sort of were able to bypass that, and get an agreement that the United States could offer Article 5 protection, which was the first time we had ever heard the Russians agree to that.
And so what you've got there from Steve Witkoff, of course, as you would imagine, Jake Tapper, the scumbag that he is over at CNN, completely misrepresents the situation. And Steve Witkoff says, no, that's not what I said. Let me explain it again to you, Jake, because you're a clueless moron and have no idea what's going on. Some level of security protection like an Article 5 NATO order that exists right now, which essentially reads an attack on one is an attack on all. That's why Ukraine is not, at least right now, is not looking at any sort of admission into NATO. Russia will never stand for that. But this security guarantee, you talk about how, and you know, with the discussion of Vladimir Putin is, oh, well, this guy's completely unhinged. He at any point could change his mind. Well, when you put those security protections in place, if it's the United States and other EU nations that agree to some sort of security guarantee, well, then there's your red flag. There's your line, no pun intended, drawn in the sand. When you've got security protections and Russia knows, hey, if we try and pull this again on Ukraine and there's a security guarantee for that country by the United States, we are going to have hell to pay. That is a huge deterrence for the Russian military and for Russian President Vladimir Putin. And security guarantees have been one of the major discussions in this thing from the start. Because yes, you could say tomorrow we've got a peace deal, we've got a ceasefire. But if there's nothing that actually holds Putin's feet to the fire, if there's nothing that actually forces him to live up and stay with that agreement, he's likely and liable to do whatever the hell he wants, which could include having another sort of offensive attack on Ukraine. But with security guarantees, with which what you just heard from Steve Witkoff have never been discussed before, at least seriously from the Russian side, they've never taken that as something that legitimately could happen. That is a major piece of negotiation. That is a major piece of the puzzle. How do you protect this country long term? And so with all of that being said, that leads us into where we're going to be here coming up later on this afternoon. Trump is set to meet with Zelensky at 1 o'clock for a bilateral meeting. That is a private meeting between Zelensky and whoever the hell else he's bringing, and Trump and his folks, Witkoff and Marco Rubio, potentially J.D. Vance and other folks. That is going to be the first meeting, a private meeting between Trump and Zelensky. Shortly after that, around 2:15, the European leaders will come into the room. And then that's where the meeting will then include all the rest of the European Union, those individuals that are going to be traveling, that are traveling to the United States, and some of them already here. That will be happening after the one-on-one meeting with Zelensky. As I mentioned earlier, the world has one shot, one opportunity to get this done, at least right now. Yeah. In a year, year and a half, 2 years from now, things could change, sure. But everybody's got a shot to get this done right now. It appears, and again, appears, that Putin is open to some sort of peace agreement, some sort of security guarantees, some sort of ceasefire. And the question is Zelensky and is the rest of the European leadership okay with something like that? Are they also interested in the same thing? For as much grief as we want to give Putin, and rightfully so, we've got to give a similar level to Zelensky. We hear him all the time talking about peace, peace, peace. And then when he's in the United States, when he's speaking to Western media, he doesn't seem like he's interested in that at all. He wants to talk about how he's going to continue to fight and stick with this. What does all of that look like? We don't know right now. We will definitely and presumably have a much better idea later on today with what this will look like, with what the negotiations between between Zelensky and Trump look like. What does that mean? Are there going to be discussions of Ukraine giving up some land? Is that one of the major sticking points for Russia? Presumably, but we don't know. And we might learn more about that today. And I can see a situation where if today's meetings go well, which I hope and pray that they do, because again, this is the shot to do it. If you actually want peace, if you actually want an agreement, this is the time to do it. Depending on how things go today, you could see another meeting with Putin, I think, within the next week or two. Very, very quickly. This administration is wasting no time to try and get this deal done if they can. And that's the key word. If they can. You can't force Putin to agree to a deal. You can't force Zelensky to agree to a deal. You can help broker it. You can bring the sides together. You can act as some sort of middleman, intermediary between them. You can do all of that. What you can't do is force them to sign. What you can't do is force them to actually agree to something. And so that is expected to take place early this afternoon in Washington, D.C. We'll keep an eye on that throughout the day and have a continued coverage here on the Nick Craig Show coming up for you tomorrow morning. Before we roll out of here, I do want to give you an update on where things stand with Hurricane Erin. Currently a massive Category 4 hurricane with its maximum sustained winds at 130 miles an hour, moving northwest at 13, pressure sitting at 945 millibars right now, a very strong storm. The track, well, hasn't changed really at all since last week. This storm is still expected to shoot the gap, thankfully, between the continental United States and Bermuda before heading out to sea and not causing any major impacts, at least from a direct landfall here in the United States. However, up in the Outer Banks areas of North Carolina, Dare, and a couple of other counties, there are state of emergencies that have gone into effect. There could be some very high surf, 15 to 20-foot waves. That has prompted some mandatory evacuations for those in the Outer Banks here across southeastern North Carolina. Depending on how close the storm gets, again, it will not directly landfall, but depending on how close the storm gets as we get into Wednesday and Thursday of this week, we could have some increased winds, some coast, some tropical rain, as this is going to be a very large storm, but not expecting any major impacts, at least across southeastern North Carolina. Maybe some beach erosion, but the Outer Banks, definitely more of those immediate impacts from the storm. Again, not landfalling there either, but some higher beach erosion, some major flooding with those 15, 20, 25-foot waves. We'll be tracking Erin throughout the week. And just to kind of keep you up to date with where things stand right now, it is the Atlantic hurricane season, and there is a yet another area that the National Hurricane Center is watching, a subtropical low off the coast of Africa heading towards the Lesser Antilles. This is the next storm that is on bat here, as it's often this time of year we see these waves kind of train over and over again. That is an area that the National Hurricane Center has a 50% chance of development in the next 7 days into a tropical system. We'll continue to watch that and the track of Erin as we continue through the week right here on the Nick Craig Show. Once again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. All eyes on Washington, D.C. today. We'll keep an eye on the details and provide you the latest tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and of course, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts, The Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us on this Monday morning. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here.